Rusty Quill presents.
Be advised that this episode of What's in the Rift contains the sounds of eating, chewing, and swallowing. For the best listening experience, we recommend headphones.
Previously on What's in the Rift.
Courts, we're going to talk about some of the things you experience and how they may relate back to your cultural aphasia, okay?
Okay, this is going to sound really awkward, and I swear I do read a lot of books, but what does aphasia mean?
So aphasia is the inability to draw forth something from your brain. Cultural aphasia is what's been affecting our world for a better part of this iteration. It's a pandemic, a plague, if you will. We are all hoping that you and people like you can help the rest of us understand what's going on.
Court, you see on this terminal screen a set of four other pictures. On the screen, you see a photograph of Bruce, a photograph of Jenny, a photograph of Jackie, and a photograph of Blanche.
So everybody's on ketamine, then, is what's happening?
Well, very similar.
Okay, so the whole band's in a K-hole. Gotcha.
As you pull into Ferndale, you do find a gas station.
At this point, I want to make sure everybody's still alive.
You have every reason to believe that they are very passed out, but also still alive. Bruce, the blizzard ended up having an outsized impact on Bruce's life, correct?
Absolutely.
This was a formative moment for Bruce, even if he doesn't understand it to be one at the moment that he opens it. Jackie, you had firsthand experience with this because some of the very first people that had fallen to neuropathogenic viremia were your folks. What were your parents' names?
My parents' names were Frank and Lois.
Jenny Thomas. That same pain, that same lasting feeling of being unwanted, chased Jenny into her fledgling adulthood, and to the moment where she saw an article that seemed to clearly state, as others had been implicitly stating, that she didn't belong here.
They're going and they're going, and the smoke's coming in. They can feel the heat and the flames getting hotter and hotter, and suddenly, Jenny feels the weight of her mother just fall on her. And Jenny didn't realize at the time, but what had happened is her mother passed out from smoke inhalation.
As you're all drifting through, you start to come to as you're crossing over the border into Tennessee.
What's in the Rift is intended for mature audiences. This show includes death, drug use, criminal activity, and a consistent undercurrent of existential dread. Any children discovered listening to this show will get the hammer.
So, Court, you are just led back to your room after an enlightening session with Helen. She pats you on the shoulder as she opens the door under the watchful eye of the two orderlies, one still not looking at you, that bears the face of your new friend, Tosca. And as she motions for you to step inside the room, she says,
Court, I'm so happy with the progress you made. This may be the quickest you've turned around after one of these episodes. I just have to say, I really am proud of you, Court. It makes me think that maybe you're getting better. Maybe there is something we can do for this. Every time I look at you, I feel a little bit more hopeful.
Aw, that actually makes me feel really happy, Helen. Thank you. And you feel that same way about, like, the other people that are here, right?
Well, yeah, of course. I just wish that we knew where they were, Court. You don't know where they are, do you? You would tell me, right?
I have literally no idea. But I'm assuming... Oh, probably back in Florida, if that is where I was.
They didn't discuss plans with you or anything like that?
Oh, no. No, it was actually very chaotic. Everything was flashing. I was exhausted. I remember running for a bit. I passed out in a park for a while. Oh, I left my coat in Florida. Like, my yellow one I like so much. It's gone, which is upsetting. But, like, I can't really remember much that we talked about.
I know your coat, Court. Do you want me to get you another coat? We got you that coat from Kmart in town, don't you remember?
Since you have been very level with me, I will also do the same. That is not the memory of the coat I have. But I cherish the coat, if that matters.
What do you remember about the coat?
Oh, alright, so I remember getting the coat from a friend of mine at the circus. He used to be a strong man that worked there, but then he threw out his back. And so he mostly was there as an announcer and to be a jolly old fellow, but he really couldn't lift much anymore, which is really sad considering he was called a strong man. But you get what I mean.
Okay, that is interesting. Court, do you recognize that this might be a result of your episodes?
Oh, yes. Now that you've told me that, like, really, any of my memories could just be lying to me. I really have to question pretty much everything.
I'm sorry. When you phrase it like that, it sounds horrible.
Well, no, it could be worse. Like, I have things that I know are true, right? Like, I have this shirt on, there's a bed over there. Really, things I interact with are real, so that's not bad.
Speaking of which...
She reaches into the pocket of her lab coat. And she fishes something out of it on a keychain and holds it in the palm of her hand. She says,
I am not supposed to give this back to you. I was never supposed to allow you to have it in the first place. But let's keep this between you and me.
And she shakes your hand and presses into it a small, round device with four buttons at the bottom of it. On a keychain, she says.
You better take good care of it this time.
I won't let it out of my sight. Thank you, Helen.
Of course.
And she takes a step back, thinks for a second, and reaches out to, it looks like, ruffle your hair. But at the last second, she kind of catches herself and lets her arm fall to her side and says,
Dinner will be by... In about 45 minutes, you usually like to take a nap after these sessions, Court. I think you should probably try to get some sleep.
You know what, Helen? For you, I'll do it.
She looks at you poignantly and then walks out. And the door closes behind her with a loud metallic click. You're back in your room. Now with a Tamagotchi.
Success!
The same room that you've been confined to for the better part of the day.
Oh man, the others are not going to believe me when I tell them what the day I've had.
And Court looks at the bed and thinks about what Helen said.
I'm not really one to, like, sleep for science or really do that at all, but you know what? Put together the shop.
And Court goes over to the bed, awkwardly lays in it, tries to get comfortable, closes her eyes, promptly opens them and realizes that she has yet to check the Tamagotchi, make sure it's fed and watered, and then attempts for the first time in recent memory for Court, she tries to fall asleep.
My understanding is that, like, a nap might be difficult for someone in your world that has just slept for maybe the longest you've slept ever with the assistance of drugs.
Almost impossible.
Are you legitimately trying to go to sleep?
Yeah, she doesn't believe it can be done, but because Helen has treated her so nicely, she's going to try.
Okay. This is going to be a test for you. This is going to be a D8 challenge with the Rift is Crumbling Crisis Dice. You have one opportunity out of this, but you have to beat an 11.
Okay. Court is going to use the distinction, what could go wrong? It's literally a nap. She's actually going to use redemption, because in her eyes, the people that kidnapped her have turned out to be genuinely good people, and she wants to do something for them. So she's going to give this task a try using that. And the last one that Court is going to use is metaphysicist. The fact that something is obviously wrong, there is a disconnect in memories and reality, and this is a center point on it, where the laws of what she believes is true may not be real in where they're at.
Okay. With the opportunity available to you, you can spend a plot point to gain an additional D8 if you so choose.
I think Course is going to let this one roll. Give it the best shot, but if it doesn't happen, nah, so be it.
You're beating an 11.
Oh, I might not be. Let's see. I got a 13, but I got a hitch.
Okay, the opportunity and the hitch will balance out in this case. You have the option here. You start to focus in on the sound of the air coming from the vent in your room directly overhead of the bed. Much to your surprise, you feel drowsy, like you could sleep. And as you start to drift through that same vent, you can hear a muffled voice. It sounds almost like somebody is having a phone conversation, and you're hearing one end of it. Do you fall asleep, or are you going to try to fight yourself back awake there, Court?
Oh, Court is way too curious to go to bed when there's a conversation going on. So she's going to try to fight herself back awake, kind of grasping onto the alarming feeling that she feels drowsy, which should never happen.
You do manage to get yourself back awake, given this surprising and kind of incongruous bout of drowsiness, as you hear a female voice echoing through the ventilation system here. It's very difficult to make out what is being said laying in bed. Are you doing anything to get yourself closer to the source of the sound?
Oh, most definitely. How high up is this vent, or is it on the ground?
Near the ceiling, actually, almost as if it's coming in from overhead. Thinking back to the hallway, you saw drop tiles in there, so you would assume that most of the electric and ventilation systems are probably run through the ceiling in this facility.
Does that mean there's drop tiles in Court's room?
No.
The way I view it is the bed that Court has small square bed posts that go up maybe 6 or so inches above where the mattress would be to stop it from being shifted around. Court's going to get up and balance on her toes to try to get as close to the vent as possible to listen.
As you get your ear up closer to this vent, you can hear the voice a little bit more clearly through the rush of air. It's difficult at first to really make out what's being said, but you can hear almost immediately that this is Helen's voice that you're hearing. But you're only hearing one side of this phone conversation, and the pieces that you do pick up go a little something like this.
This afternoon, no, please reconsider. You entirely thought that's a good idea. All right, if it is possible, I'll make sure that there is a part in her availability today for you to meet with her. You're sure you want to come here for this and not. I still haven't had time to get any meaningful information from Jessica about where her friend may be. If I could have, I don't know, just one week with her, maybe I could get that dinner.
And then silence. You hear the clack of heels in the hallway.
Back down into the bed I go.
There's no knock this time. The door opens and in steps the orderly that does not look like your friend, and Helen. And she closes the door and stands at the foot of your bed.
Court? Honey, I know I told you to try to take a nap, but it's suddenly become very important that we find out more about where your friends might be.
Oh, sure. No, I'm up for talking more. That works for me.
Okay. Court, I need you to tell me everything you know now. Please.
Oh, okay. I'm going to assume you mean about the whole, like, escape thing, right? Not just, like, everything I know. So I'm going to narrow that down.
She looks at you briefly, and you can see in her eyes that she is fighting some level of annoyance bubbling up.
Oh, you're really serious right now.
Court's going to go from, like, slouched over posture to an up straight.
Okay, so then you have to work with me here then, all right? What are the stakes we're talking about? Because you seem very upset, Helen. Is everything okay?
My boss is going to be here, and he expects me to have an idea where each of you are. I need to get that information as soon as possible, because I need to be able to tell him how we're going to get the rest of you back so we can continue our studies. I don't know if you know. I think you may still be confused from the most recent bout of aphasia, but this most recent episode of cultural aphasia has been particularly bad. I know I told you a little bit about it. I know that my boss is very concerned that we're not making enough progress. And he's very upset that everyone managed to escape. Again. I really need to know where everyone is so I can help them. Now. Please.
Okay. Alright. Ellen, you want to sit down on the bed with me?
She looks a little bit flustered, but she takes a deep breath and sighs and takes a couple steps forward and sits down on the bed next to you.
Okay. Helen, I like you, but I'm going to try to give you as much as I know, but I'm going to say flat out right now, I have no idea where they are at.
I don't believe you, Court.
I mean, I have been unconscious for, like, half of a day.
I don't...
And the last time I saw them, I ran away in order to distract a helicopter.
You mean you ran away from us? From us trying to bring you back here?
Yes.
We're well aware. We know that they went another direction than you. But I have to assume that you didn't just go running off for the hell of it, Court. So where did they go? And who was the person that we saw them with?
And she reaches into her pocket and pulls out her phone. And she brings up a blurry photo of a blonde woman wearing a red tracksuit.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Court never actually met her.
Yep. Nope. Never. Has no idea who any of these people are.
Okay. Court looks genuinely confused by the picture, looks at Helen and says,
"The only one we were with that was weird was a man named Gibson who had a milk crate for a leg and threatened me with a wrench. But the reason that I ran away was because I was buying them time."
Time for what, Court?
To escape. We were in a ravine. There was a helicopter, a car crash. It was horrible. So in order to make sure that they got anywhere, I made a break for it. And I ran into the light of the helicopter. I was a distraction.
You're telling me you have no idea where they are?
I have literally no idea. And that, I mean, completely honest.
You understand that if I can tell Dima something, anything, that he's going to take you and that I won't be able to take care of you anymore, right?
I did not know that. But even with that knowledge, I can't... I could lie, but I think that would just get you in trouble later down the line.
Okay, you swear to me that there's nothing you're hiding.
I'm going to do you one better.
And Court brings out her pinky.
I don't break these. That is the knowledge I have.
Helen looks at you, and she doesn't offer her pinky back. She just stands up and she says,
I really hope you're not lying to me, Court.
And she steps out of the room, and the orderly closes the door behind her. You can hear those footsteps receding in the hallway, and you can hear somewhere outside of your room doors opening and closing, and more footsteps moving up and down, almost as if something's being prepared out in the hall. Court, you're left alone for a number of hours thereafter. You will occasionally hear hurried or otherwise rushed movement outside of your room, but there's no one coming back to attend to you at all. After what you assume is dark, based on the clock on the wall in your room, you get a knock on the door and a tray is offered to you with the same inoffensive, completely bland hospital food. The orderly looks at you as he hands it to you and says,
Listen, I don't think Helen's gonna say it, but if you get taken back to Chicago, it's not gonna be good for you. There have been some wild stories out of there. Don't know how much is true, but if I were you, I'd be maybe thinking about how to get out of here. I'm Jeff, by the way.
Oh. And he winks at you. He goes,
I got in a little bit of trouble for the last one. You might not remember me, though.
I have a few inklings, Jeff.
Okay.
Thank you.
Just saying, doorway at the end of the hall, if you can find a way out of here, I can't leave yours unlocked. Too suspicious. But if you can find a way out of here,
I definitely can. Jeff, before you go, I've been here for a while, right?
He looks at you and doesn't say anything.
Has anyone ever come and visited me?
I don't know, kid. I've told you everything I can tell you. It has to look like an accident.
Don't worry. It will definitely look like one. And thank you for the food, Jeff.
Don't mention it.
And he closes the door behind him. Meanwhile, just crossing over the border into Tennessee, Tosca, you've been driving for almost 16 hours straight. It is a long haul, and you have no money to buy goods or supplies, and the only gas that you were able to get was gas that you had begged off of a stranger in northern Atlanta. So, you cross over into Tennessee, not far from Chattanooga at all. And you, according to your GPS, are only about 35 minutes away from Manchester at this time.
Cool.
Crossing into Chattanooga, going past the Tennessee River, and snaking your way out to the bridge on US 41, you start to feel the weight of the drive on you at this point. The people in your back seat are now just starting to stir. The first one awake is Jenny, still laying on the floorboards in the back seat. Jenny, you awake to the sight of Blanche's legs dangling just a few feet from your face. and your feet propped up on the center console, and your muscles ache. You feel cold, you feel bruised, you feel incredibly stiff.
I remember everything while I was out, right? So, like, all of those memories are fresh in my brain.
Yes, very much so.
Well, that's rude. Did a lot of work to suppress that. So you would probably hear her as she first starts to stir, try and stretch. She's like, where am I? What happened?
What up, what? Jenny?
Why? Wasn't I driving?
I am so glad somebody's awake.
Are these Blanche's feet?
Yeah, y'all got ketamine, and then I brought us to Tennessee. It's cool.
We got what? Tennessee? We're here.
Disassociated.
Bruce, you slowly break out of your reverie, and you look over and you see Robert slouched, his head on your shoulder, on the bench next to you. He's starting to stir, but the one thing that registers before all of that is the long trail of drool that ended up on your borrowed clothing.
Well, I guess it gets what it deserves.
And Bruce startles.
Tosca, 10-2, buddy.
Oh my God. Bruce, I just got, we're in Tennessee, man. Go back to sleep if you're going to be like that.
Jackie, Blanche, you come to in the next couple moments, again, with that immense feeling of stiffness, with the sensation of being inordinately cold. And as you're up and looking around, Ace, who's been up for much longer than both of you, starts to whine and paw at you, Jackie.
Oh. It's all right, boy. I'm here now.
And last to awake is Victoria. Victoria, in the passenger seat, comes to, and after shaking off the initial bits of grogginess, she turns to you, Tosca, and says,
where the fuck are we, and what happened?
Tennessee, bro. What happened is y'all all got drugged, and drugs don't work on me. So I drove here.
What do you mean drugs don't work on you?
It's fine. We're fine. That's why I was at the reservation. Drugs do not seem to, something's up with my DNA. Don't know what to tell you.
Where are we going?
So I'm like, Koyos, excuse me, invulnerable.
Where are we going, Tosca?
Court, how many times do we got to tell you, Victoria? Like, we've been saying the same thing.
No, do you even know what you're looking for?
No, I know to get to Manchester, and that's what I'm doing. We're like 35 miles outside Manchester. What we do when we get there is not my responsibility. Do you know where we're going?
Do you know what's at Manchester, Tosca?
Yeah, like a holding center or whatever. We know that Court's there. That's what we know. Or that's what we think we know.
Jackie, you know what's at Manchester, and it just clicks. It's something that you haven't thought about for a long time. But there's an Air Force base in the Manchester, in your world, Arnold Air Force Base. Do you want to share that from the back seat of the vehicle?
There's also should be an air base there, Arnold?
Yeah, Arnold Air Force Base.
Is it active?
Yes, yes, very active. I know for a fact that most UCRI air operations are based out of Arnold AFB.
Victoria, has anybody ever told you that you're a Debbie Downer? Anybody? Like, so what?
Hey, Tosca, do you know how long I've had to survive running from these assholes? From these sick fucks?
How long?
Yeah, how long?
For the past 6 years.
Well, you're doing great. 6 years is a long fucking time, bro.
Yeah, but why?
Oh, fuck, you want to know why? You want to know why I'm running from them? Because they fucking killed me, okay? They killed me. Like, made me dead. And then brought me back to life somehow. And killed me again. And then did it all over again. All in all, I've been dead three times over just because of those fuckers at UCRI.
So what's it like?
Wow, Jason must really be on your side.
Jenny has taken her feet off of the console, but she is kind of curled up into this ball and she's sort of staring off into space, obviously thinking about all these memories now with a little tear in her eye. But when Victoria says that they killed her and brought her back to life, Jenny perks her head up.
You mean that's actually a thing? How did they kill you? What happened? How'd you know?
You all seem to think this is much more beautiful or spiritual bullshit than it actually is.
No, I think the same thing happened to me, but I'm not sure. I'm genuinely curious.
Is that what they're doing to us? Is that why they're hunting us?
Look, I don't know why they're hunting you. Best I can tell, you didn't even exist before whatever happened back in that canal there.
But is there an afterlife, though? Huh.
The fuck if
I
know?
Was I dead in the gelato place?
Listen, I...
You said they killed you like three times.
Do you want to know what I saw or not?
Yes, please.
The first time I saw a news report, I woke up on this couch that wasn't my couch. It was no couch I'd ever even seen. I had a cigarette in my mouth that I'd apparently fallen asleep smoking, I guess. I've never smoked. And on the news, they were talking about a school shooting in China Grove, North Carolina. And the anchor, as he was talking about dead kids, was smoking on screen too. And when I came back, when I was yanked back out of that, when I came to, whose face was fucking there, huh? Dima fucking Volkov. And that smug, long-haired asshole was all, "Tell me about what you remember. Tell me about what you saw." And I had to spend 3 days recounting every goddamn detail of those 10 minutes over and over and over again. Because I was, as he put it, someplace else.
Do you ever wonder if there was a time that they killed you and you came back and you don't remember?
I don't know. I maybe...
Like you stayed?
No, like you came back, but you just don't remember the part where you were gone.
If I don't remember, how am I supposed to tell you? They did a lot of things to me after I signed those papers.
What if you're still dead?
What if we're all dead, Blanche? Come on.
What if?
Jenny shifts extremely uncomfortably.
You're driving down Highway 41 here in the dark, and you're coming up to Monteagle, and the GPS starts chirping at you to begin making a turn.
In 2 miles,
and when you look down at it on your phone, Tosca, you notice that it reads only 21 minutes to your destination.
Okay.
Victoria looks back at you all and says,
"But that was just the first time. The second time I woke up and I was in some, I don't know, some family chain restaurant. Except there weren't tables. There were troughs. And we were celebrating somebody's birthday, I guess. And they sang this horrible song. Everyone had on hats. And when they came out with, I don't know what it was. It was like celebration slop. And they laid it all out in this trough, and I watched everyone, one by one, digging their faces into it. And then it was my turn. And without me wanting to, I did too. I don't know why. It's like I wasn't in control of what was happening. Like I was along for the ride. And then they wrenched me back again, and we spent a fucking week talking about it. And the last one, I was swimming. In a sweater, that was it. 20 minutes at a normal suburban pool, but everyone had on sweaters. But that trough, and that song, and that slop, and the feel of it, cold, going down my throat. I still don't know what Dima did to me. I don't know how they stopped my heart, but I heard myself fucking flatline before I went under and then woke up to that. whatever they're doing is sick. And it's wrong, and it has to stop. And I don't even know if I want to know what it is, but I have to know.
Are they using the hammer on you when they did this?
No, I never needed that.
What do you mean by needed?
You know what this sounds like? This sounds like this TV show that I used to watch. I wasn't supposed to watch it because, you know, parents. But they used to, like, travel. And I don't mean, like, a road trip. But they'd go to different places. But these places were alternate realities. And they were trying to get home to theirs.
Like Quantum Leap?
I mean, something like that. I don't remember. I was too young to watch it. I shouldn't have been watching. So I don't remember all the details. But I know there was some travel, and they'd go to different places, but these places were alternate realities, and they were trying to get home to theirs.
Yeah, when Master Richter and his minions hunt the team, issues 51 through 58, that's what you're thinking of.
Bruce,
sure, yeah. Just, it sounds like reality jumping.
Yeah, that's kind of what Demo was getting at, too. He seemed to think that there were other places out there that we could get to, that we could learn something from, if we could just see these other places. There were times I heard things I'm sure I wasn't supposed to, but that's what it was all about.
How does it go from him killing you and sending you places to people like us ending up where you are?
I don't know.
Maybe we're ripped back from those places.
Like we belong here?
Right.
No, like we belong in the other places.
You said that Jason finger-gunned you and you went somewhere else, right?
I did. It was the Grand Destino, but it was different.
Right. Maybe it's something like that. Maybe he's found how Jason's miracle finger-guns transport people. I mean, there's science behind everything, right?
So if we were all in different places, but we somehow ended up in the same place every time that noise happened, what causes that noise? Victoria, do you know what noise I'm talking about? It was...
Wait a minute. You said you died how many times?
Three.
And how many times did we hear that noise before we were all together?
But that was like 6 years ago, I thought.
It was.
For her.
And the sounds we heard were very close together.
Vicky, when you said Alana died 3 years ago, do you mean she's dead or do you mean the same thing happened to her?
I don't know. All I know is that Dima and his cronies were all over the news, Alana included. And then there was suddenly radio silence on Alana. Then there was some clamor over her missing, and a month after that, she was presumed dead.
She was missing?
Yeah.
Oh my god, Tosca, what if that was the woman in your closet?
I've been thinking that for a while now, actually. It is.
Then who killed her, too?
Look, I had nothing
but if they were doing
to
the
fucking
same
do
thing
with that one. That's where I got
the
hammer.
He got the hammer
the
from
them.
That would make perfect sense.
Maybe the before
no, she was dead,
reality
like,
jumpers, if that makes
hold,
sense.
Hold on. Whoa, Jenny.
Eyes on the road.
Wait. If she found out how Dima was getting you to jump from world to world, but she did it physically... And maybe it messed something up, which is why we're here. But maybe she went and hid in your world, Tosca, and took the hammer with her because they disagreed.
My world would be a good place to hide.
Right?
Victoria looks over at you, Tosca, and says,
well, we can settle this real quick. Here's a picture of her.
And she pulls out her phone and holds it up to you.
He needs to keep his eyes on the road.
Dude, I didn't even know it was a girl until Herman pointed it out. So, I mean, do you have like a mummified picture of her so I can see that to compare or what?
She holds up a picture on her phone of a woman wearing a severe black overcoat and with a middle-length blonde haircut, straight as straw, that is hanging down the sides of her head in the middle part. Her face is gaunt, almost, and she looks distant. She looks like her mind is elsewhere.
She was sure as hell gaunt and distant in the bottom of the closet.
Do you remember anything about that woman? You didn't pay her much attention at all.
Yeah, enough to push her out of the way so I wouldn't have to trip over her. Yeah. Like I said, I didn't know it was a woman until Herman pointed it out.
She shows the phone to all of you and says,
"Do any of you recognize her?"
Well, yeah, she looks worse than when I met her, though.
I've never seen that woman.
This is one of the last photos that was ever taken of her. You know this woman, Bruce?
Well, like I told you before, I met her.
This is her. You met her just hours ago?
With Dima.
That doesn't make sense.
None of this makes sense.
I'm a time traveler.
Lady, you just said you died three times and were living other lives and ate shit out of troughs. Like, I think we're past the point of sense.
Yeah, yeah. You're right.
I'm glad I just got an IPA, not a trough.
She points ahead and she says,
"Is this your town? That sure looks like the Air Force base off to the left."
Wait, before we go any further, we should probably stop and figure out what we're going to do when we get there.
Agreed.
Can you find a place to pull off?
Plus, can somebody else please drive?
Doing great.
You pass through a small town called Hillsborough, past the Dollar General there, and when you're just barely in sight of the razor wire on the Air Force base, you see a little sign advertising something called the Broken Banjo RV Park.
Go there.
You pull into an RV park not far from the main entrance into Arnold Air Force Base. You see a rather ridiculous covered wagon at the gate to this place, but the gate itself is open. This is off season for the RV park, and it appears that no one is here to actually monitor this place. You come in and there are a few folks. They're obviously camping without any sort of license to do so, and you pull the car into one of the stalls near a small cabin there.
Bruce says, "Robert, earmuffs." And he's going to try to whisper over Robert to Blanche. "Can we trust this guy? Because I'm thinking, if he's UCRI, maybe he could drive in and give his code word or whatever."
I mean, didn't it take two? And, like, aren't they going to question him? Where's his partner? Why did he leave his post in Orlando? Like,
I don't.
Are we asking for trouble?
I wasn't sure.
Oh, I don't think this is a good choice.
Yeah, also, if we left this facility and we go back in there, they're not going to let us out.
Okay, Robert, you can take your hands off.
What does the facility even look like? Is it gated? Is there a wall? Is it just open? Like,
the Air Force base?
The specific building that we're going to. Well, I guess the base. How are we going to get on the base?
You don't know what building you're going to. You don't know if it's on the base. You don't know.
I thought we had the address.
Of this information.
Where's that folder?
I don't know.
Hey, Victoria, did you have a plan to get into the facility? And do you know which building it is?
No, I had a plan to get you back someplace safe near Chicago, where I could have accounted for you. I've spent years setting up an operation there to get close so I could figure out what was going on. Hopefully with the help of people I'd rescued from UCRI. I have no support structures here in Tennessee. I have no idea what the fuck we're doing here besides getting this person you just met.
Yes, we'll get to your plan once we have court.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. Sure.
She's important.
If you make it.
Would any of your info help us at all into getting into this facility?
Robert, do you know where this is?
No idea, man. Never been here before.
No, but I have this binder.
Does it have the address?
I read the binder. It's not that helpful for this.
that binder was left intentionally kind of sparse as a means to encourage you folks to creatively spend your plot points.
All right, I'll do it. I will spend one of my newly remembered and acquired plot points to fill out these pages with addresses where they specifically are located.
Looking back at the binder, Jenny, you flip through the pages by the dome light in this SUV. You do notice that there is an appendix, and you pull that out of an inside pocket of this hard plastic binder, and you look for the facility in Manchester, Tennessee. And you get an address that when is plugged into your GPS does not lead to Arnold Air Force Base at all, but leads to a facility on the north side of Manchester.
You guys, look at this. We weren't even close. And I will show the group the paper and the boo-boo.
Cool. So now we know where we're going, right?
Does it have street view?
Sure.
I would like to switch to street view and kind of see what I can see as far as the outside
setup.
That'll
be 3 plot points.
It's Google. It comes with it.
Boo-boo. It's boo-boo.
Okay, can I have the picnic basket view?
You pull up your street view, and when you type in the address on 431 Interstate Drive, you see that you can't quite get all the way down to where this building is.
Of course.
But you can make out at the front of it that there is a side road that the main entrance appears to be off of. It is dirt. It says Substation Drive. And if you pan the camera around, you can just make out, barely, on the front of this building, something that says Professional Services.
Jenny, your phone is amazing. Who drew
that? Oh, it's not my phone. It's Tosca's.
Who drew that?
What do you mean, who drew that?
That's incredible.
It's just their pictures. Have you never seen Boo Boo Street View? But anyways, look, so you see there's the side road here. I guess maybe we could try that. It can't really get too close, so I'm not sure, but
we can't just all drive up in this vehicle, though. I don't think we don't even have guns to be ablazing.
I think that it's late. We should get some rest and create a plan of attack, maybe over some pancakes in the morning.
All right, I'll take first watch.
We at least need to get a few hours of sleep each.
Hey, I've been asleep for like 12 ass hours. I don't know what y'all are talking about.
You've been all passed out for a number of hours.
But it doesn't feel like we've been passed out though, right? Because we were having memories. Memory rush.
No, you're deep inside your own brains.
Everybody put your jackets down. Let Tosca lie on them.
I don't have a jacket. It was unseasonably warm.
Yeah, what the hell are you talking?
I couldn't even say it with a straight face.
Okay.
Where's my jacket?
You spend some time figuring out the logistics of how you're going to camp in this SUV that's already packed to the brim with 7 people and a dog. You settle in and somebody thinks to turn out the dome light. You eventually, one by one, drift off. On the other side of town, Court, you hear a light rapping on your door. It is well after midnight. I'm assuming that you have been waiting for some kind of signal, though, given the information that Jeff gave you.
Oh, yes, definitely.
And this sure sounds like a signal.
Okay. Time to go.
And Court will, for a flashback to when Court got her meal and finished what I can only assume was a tuna salad sandwich, some coleslaw that did not have enough pepper in it, a piece of toast, which was weird because they had like a sandwich already, and then just sliced apples without the skin, so you couldn't really tell what kind of apple it was beforehand. But there was a spoon for the coleslaw, and Court tucked that into the pillowcase after she was finished eating.
So you have a spoon, sure. I'll grant you the spoon.
Step 1 of my plan.
it all hinges now on
Shawshank.
I would like to spend a plot point. That vent that is above the bed is it's tight, but it's just enough that Court thinks she might be able to squeeze through if she can get past the pin, the cover.
Okay. I will agree with that.
And that summons the cops, right?
Obviously.
Court is going to get up onto the bed again and take this spoon and use the tip of it to start unscrewing the screws that are keeping the grate on the vent.
There are a number of screws here that you have to work through. Give me a test for this. We're going to make this a D10 challenge for you to do this in a rapid and quiet manner.
So I'm definitely using self-preservation. I'm going to use Scoundrel as well, because this, I'm literally trying to break out of facility through air ducts. And I'm actually going to use Acid on this one, because I need to keep myself incredibly still while rapidly trying to remove these screws so I don't make any noise or cause any commotion or fall.
Okay. You have to beat an 11.
All right, let's find out. So that is a 16.
Okay, that is a heroic success. So tell me exactly how this goes down. You are up again on the post of your bed to unscrew this vent.
Yes.
Tell me exactly what happens.
So Court gets up there quite confident in her ability to take out flathead screws with a spoon, as she has done throughout her entire life.
As one does.
But what really gets to her as she gets up there, she sees these are not flathead screws, but instead her worst enemy, Phillip head screws. This causes a moment of panic for Court before she, you know, just decides to dive into things. She uses, again, just the tip of the spoon to try to get traction, and after a couple tries, manages to kind of get a rhythm going, and she gets through 4, 5, 6 of these screws. And she's on the last one with kind of beads of sweat starting to drip down of this overly dramatic moment for her. And as the final screw comes out, it comes at a weird angle and starts to fall towards the bed. Court instinctually tries to push her foot out in order to catch the screw, at least try to slow it down in which way, but she misses. And it falls onto the bed. It makes absolutely no sound. Court removes the cover.
Okay. Great. You take the handful of screws after realizing again that beds are soft and let them fall to the bed, and you take the cover and you gently drop it to the bed as well, where it lands with a almost imperceptible thwap. The opening in front of you is just large enough for you to squeeze your shoulders through. As you look down this vent, it would appear to travel about good maybe 8 to 10 feet across what you have to assume would be the hallway outside before it ends in whatever the room across the hall is. And you can see a faint light shining up through the vent over there as well.
So Court will first make sure she has everything she needs before she leaves the room. So she will grab her Tamagotchi and actually about 2 or 3 of the screws, just in case.
Okay.
And then she is going to hoist herself into this vent.
You make your way forward. Is your plan to go to the vent across the hall?
Court's going to start moving towards just down the vent system. And this is a fully enclosed vent system, right? It's not like it's just opens up into a...
No, it's not an open air circulatory system or anything like that. It is HVAC. Okay.
That makes things much easier, because Court will just follow the vent plan as she moves forward.
Okay, the only way for you to progress, at least from where you're at, is to go first up to the opposite side of what you'd have to assume below you is the hallway. Traversing this is slow going as you're trying to be mindful of the amount of noise you're creating, because quite frankly, you have no insight into what may be out there or audible for those in the hallway, if indeed there is anyone in the hallway. So as you crawl on your belly with your arms stretched out in front of your head, you make your way up to the next vent. were you not a contortionist, you don't think that you would have been able to do this. If Court weren't so slight to begin with, this would have been a much more difficult task, but you do get there. And when you look down the vent, once you have a little bit of elbow room because the HVAC branches off to the left, you see that the room across the hallway appears to be some type of break room. It is softly illuminated. There is a couch, there is a coffee machine, there is a fridge, and there is a circular table with a few very institutional purple faded fabric chairs and hard micro countertop with a inset sink.
All right. Court's going to take a moment to stop moving and just listen for the first time since she's gone into the vent and see if she can hear any movement from either inside the room where she can't see or from outside the room, like any kind of muffled sounds.
You don't hear anything from where you're at right now, but it's a little difficult to use hearing as your primary sense to detect any of this because you're in an HVAC system and the rush of air around you is fairly loud. It's audible over almost everything else.
Court's gonna hope against all odds that this grate is open.
Okay. You go to press against it, but it does not budge.
Is the grate... is there a design in it, or is it just square?
What do you mean by a design?
So some grates will have metal designs?
No, this is a slatted metal grate.
Okay.
Like, this is an unadorned metal slatted grate.
Is there enough room for Court to get fingers through this grate?
Potentially. You might be able to get a bit of a grip on it.
Okay. Because my idea is trying to loosen the screws by sticking my fingers through and trying to undo them from the inside.
There's no way that you're going to stick your finger all the way through.
That was all I need to know for that.
Here's what you do have in front of you. You have this grate. You have off to the left a continuation of the HVAC system. Getting your body around that feels like it might be doable, but may be painful as you're almost certain you're going to have to drag your back along this sharp metal edge on the interior of the ductwork here. You could potentially, if you got yourself angled the right way, kick at this grate, but you imagine that might be kind of loud, or you can maybe follow this HVAC back to wherever there's a central trunk or something else along those lines. Beyond that, you are out of the room right now, but you are in a claustrophobically small space, and the warm air is making it difficult to breathe, to feel comfortable. Like, you are in an air that is probably bordering on 80 degrees as it fights the cool air outside.
I do not have much time then. Otherwise, well, I never like the heat.
Court's going to try going to the left. I can contort her body to make that turn.
All right, well, here's your opportunity for some plot points because I'm going to need you to give me a roll for this. This is going to be a D6 challenge to get yourself over there without hurting. That's a 7 that you'll need to beat.
All right, I am going to use Court's special effect, make it a show. So I'm going to be stepping down.
Okay.
My dice pool, which I'm going to use light on my feet, fast to act, as essentially making a split decision to just try to wiggle my way out of this. I'm going to use athlete because physical activity, trying to contort myself, and artist because there's a certain kind of, because I'm a contortionist, a form that comes with it.
For sure.
Okay. So I got an 8 total, but I also got a 1 on one of my die.
Okay. You will get a plot point plus another plot point for the hitch. You are going to have a D6 complication introduced. That is a fresh wound on your back. As you get yourself contorted around this edge, trying to move quickly, maybe not as cautious as you'd normally be, you catch your shoulder blade on the exposed ductwork and it bites down through the fabric and rakes along you as you push yourself through. The wound feels cold and wet despite the warm air around you, and you can feel the blood soaking into your shirt. But you do manage to get around that corner. And you are positioned now, heading up further into the ductwork with your feet by that grate that you just passed. With two plot points now, too.
I'm going to say Court is going to continue along the HVAC system, and I'm probably going to end up spending these two plot points I just got.
Okay.
As it goes on for a little while before there is another grate that Court sees to the right as a branch, so either left or right. And as Court looks into it, it is into like a utility closet that has like a water heater in it that is actively running it, and it's kind of old, so it's making a lot of noise.
You look back across the ductwork to the other side, and what you have to assume again is back across that hall. You do see another grate, and you can guess, based on the turns and movements that you've made, that that may be the office that you were in with Helen earlier, which would mean that this is indeed the utility closet across the hall from her office that you saw when you first walked in.
So Court is going to make a left turn towards Helen's office to position her feet so that she can try to kick the grate in the utility closet. But as she's doing so, she's going to see if she can sneak a peek to see if Helen's even in there right now.
Sure. You can scuttle across that hallway and look down into that office. And what you see is the office is lit. The monitor of the computer is visible, but you do not see anybody in the office.
All right. Court is going to shuffle her way towards the grate on the utility closet and kind of listen to see how loud this wire heater gets. And once she gets a feel for when it's at its loudest, when it's at its quietest, going to try to kick the grate when it's loud.
You get yourself back to the other side of the hallway, and almost as if by fate, that water heater kicks on and starts a full heating cycle.
Yes.
And the noise is loud enough that you feel that you might be able to bang a little bit in this ductwork without raising too much concern. But I do want to remind you that you were able to hear Helen when she was on the phone in her office earlier. So there is the potential for this to carry.
Definitely. Okay.
So this will be a test if you're going to be kicking this through.
Corey's definitely going to try to give this a shot.
This is going to be a D10 challenge with the crisis die and your complication.
All right.
It looks like this is a 12 only, with one opportunity that would, were you to take it, you could add a D10 to your pool.
You know what? I am going to take that. Oh, it's a plot point?
That will be one plot point. Yep. And you can add an additional D10 to your roll.
I'm going to use athlete, because I'm kicking it. I'm going to use something that's watching, because I'm trying to essentially try to avoid all detection.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much a prey-like situation. And I'm going to use self-preservation. I'm trying not to be sent to Chicago, and this is my best chance of getting out of here.
All right. Go ahead and give me that roll. You're beating a 12.
I am definitely beating a 12. I got a 17.
All right. Well, just enough for another heroic success. So describe to me what happens here.
So as opposed to kind of the theatrics that Court was doing for herself when she was in more of a controlled situation, Court is much more serious this time. She has a wound starting to really sting, and the air is getting hot, so her breathing's starting to get a little bit more frantic and ragged. So she braces herself with her elbows on both ends of this duct, pulls back her feet, and in one just forceful motion kicks forward and bends in this grate. It doesn't come fully off, but it gives her enough leeway to kind of slowly bend it up with her feet, making just enough room for her to slip through.
You drop down into this utility closet, and it is dark. The only illumination that you have in this room is the glow of the fire that is currently heating the water tank on the far wall. You can see light coming in from the door immediately behind you from where you drop down, and it spills out between your feet. Are you looking for anything in this utility closet, or are you just trying the door?
Court is actually going to try to see if she can find anything of use in here. Really anything at all, because she doesn't want to
go out in the open just in case she made a lot of noise.
Mm-hmm.
So she's going to use this time to kind of lay low and see if she can find anything.
You spend a few minutes rooting around in here. You do find some bleach. You find some ammonia. You find a few plungers. You find a mop and with a detachable handle and a bucket. But other than that, it's mostly just nitrile gloves and other implements that you would expect to eventually find their way onto a custodial cart.
That does bleach and ammonia sound so familiar to me. Like, I remember it, like not being good. Like, what does it do?
Mix it together and find out.
Something inside my head is telling me I should mix it together and find out.
And Court is going to take this mop bucket and put the bleach in. And she's going to hold on to the ammonia. And then she's going to crack the door to kind of see if she can see out. See if she notices anything.
You crack the door. It's facing the opposite side of the hallway from where you came. So you're looking further down into the building at this point. You don't see anyone down that way, but you do see another set of double doors that would indicate that there's a different wing were you to continue along that path.
Core is going to slip to the other side of the door.
Okay.
She's going to, as she's now on the other side with the mop bucket, just kind of like in the threshold right before where the door would actually close shut, going to go, oh, please don't be loud and explosive. And she's going to pour the other container into the bucket.
Okay.
And leave the door cracked open.
All right. Go ahead and I just need to research what chlorine
yep,
gas.
Yep, not good stuff. But in a ventilated area, it just causes discomfort, coughing, and really, unless you have, like, trapped in the room, nothing serious. Just unless you have asthma, in which case, oh God, no. I may have accidentally chlorine gassed myself multiple times as a kid. And yeah.
Okay.
It was a
multiple
I
times?
Don't want to talk about it. I grew up in Florida and I was a chemistry major. I did a lot of dumb stuff.
Okay.
But yeah, wow, if you were locked in the room with that, you would probably actually destroy your lungs. But with ventilation, it's just going to be painful.
Here's the thing. I rolled a die here, and unfortunately, you landed on the low end of this.
Okay.
Which means that ammonia that you poured in was an ammonia and acid, particularly stringent cleaner.
Oh, no.
Which means that what's produced isn't chloramine gas, but chlorine gas.
Oh, shit. I just war crimed this place.
Uh-huh.
Hell yeah.
It was dark. It's hard to tell.
You do this, you leave the door cracked, and you stop for a minute, and you look down the hallway back towards your room, and you get the immediate sensation in your eyes first that something is burning, something stringent, something feels like it is aggressively binding to the surface of your eyes. And you squint hard, but it doesn't seem to help because it feels almost like your mucous membranes are turning themselves inside out. And what started with your eyes now watering, dripping water, has made its way to your nose, which seems to have had a spigot turned on as well. Court, you would venture to say that whatever you did worked for sure, but the mixture of whatever was in that ammonia definitely was much more pungent than you were expecting from your experience with this kind of reaction as a child.
Court definitely realizes something is horribly wrong and immediately shuts the door and starts running towards where the entrance of the facility. All caution and stealth out of the way, she's actually actively trying to make noise. And as she is sprinting, once she kind of like gets to the point where she can see the doors that lead out of the place, probably gonna scare the shit out of a receptionist here. Court starts screaming, "Everybody get out of the building! There is deadly gas!" Just at the top of her lungs. Just yelling warning signs that's not safe to be here and not to enter the closet without a gas mask. Just every warning you can imagine, Court is screaming.
Court, you stream down this hallway. You bust through the double doors that conveniently were left unlocked. You almost knock over the orderly standing on the other side of it, who happens to be Jeff, who raises a fist as you run by.
Woo! Hell yeah, Court! Fuck the system! Get now!
Get out of the place, it's going to kill you!
You round the corner, you come up to the cage at the entrance of the reception office. You see that for this time, at least, the cage door has been left open. The receptionist is not there, but there is a fire alarm near the exit to the building. And as you go through that cage and press through to the glass doors at the front, do you pull the fire alarm or...
You know what? Court would pull the fire alarm. Court realized that she fucked up. And whether she gets out or not is secondary to not having a bunch of people die in the facility.
Court is noble and selfless in that sense. She pulls the fire alarm. You pull the fire alarm. Spin away, slam your butt into the handle of this door, and bound out into the night air, where you run full-bodied into a small, framed, but solid man. A man with long, black hair tied back in a ponytail and black sideburns down to his jawline. Accompanying him on either side are two men in black jumpsuits with the words UCRI emblazoned across them.
You don't want to go in there.
He looks startled, and for the briefest second, he stops.
Oh, Court. I'm so glad to see you again.
This has been What's in the Rift. If you enjoyed our show, please remember to rate and review on your favorite podcast platforms. If you really enjoyed our show, you can support us directly via Patreon or join our Discord. Both links can be found at whatsintherift.com.
What's in the Rift is brought to you by Gas Station Drugs.